ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
I first started compiling materials for this in 1989. I was, like, I think most of the devotees in the movement, I was very much appreciating the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita by Satsarupa Maharaj, Satsarupa Goswami Maharaj, which reveals so many details of Prabhupada's pastimes that previously we had not been familiar with. Now, this time I was traveling and preaching in Bengal, both West Bengal and Bangladesh. And in West Bengal, which is part of India especially, I would often meet disciples or grand disciples, Bhaskara Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who were scattered throughout West Bengal especially, also in Bangladesh, in ashrams and in homes. And when I met them, they would often tell me some different stories of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which of course were very wonderfully enlivening and instructive also. So the idea grew in my mind of making a more extensive biography of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati even to that in compiling, based on the idea of the Prabhupada Lilamrita. Probably most of you are familiar with the small book called Prabhupada in Russian, but actually the original book in English is a very big 6-volume edition with many, many anecdotes of Prabhupada. So I thought to compile such a book on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also. There are already several biographies published in Bengali and one in Oriya language also. And one of the Bengali editions had been translated into a very poor kind of English. However, I found that these biographies, they were mostly collections of dates and places and events, which was also nice, no doubt. But it didn't leave such a strong impression as the Prabhupada Lilamrita did, because through this, so many different anecdotes, we really felt that we came to know something about Prabhupada as a person. Siddha Pragya Siddha Bhasha Samadhi Stasi Pishara Siddha Di Kim Pravasha Ita Kim Asi Tepa Jinta Kim. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks Krishna about the symptoms of the self-realized person. How does he talk? What does he say? How does he sit? How does he walk? He wanted to know what's a self-realized person, what's he actually like. Now, of course, a self-realized person cannot be known simply by describing or analyzing him. There's a very interesting thing that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur once said to his disciples. Because naturally, as his guru, he was always speaking and instructing them. I mean, Bhakti, he said that, I'm speaking and you are hearing, but there is a gap between us. So what was that gap? Not simply physical, just like you between you and me, but space. A gap of consciousness and realization. So as Hari Shankar was saying last night, that that people say about him that, well, Hari Shankar, he knows Prabhupada, but as far as he's concerned, I don't know Prabhupada. Lord Brahma said about Krishna that some people may think that they may say that they know you. Let them speak like that. But as far as I'm concerned, neither by bodily, vocal, or mental activities is it possible to understand your glories. So like Krishna, his pure devotee is also unlimited, and to know him, especially for persons of very limited consciousness like ourselves, we cannot know them. Nevertheless, by beginning to know them, by hearing about them and trying to follow in their footsteps and seeking their blessings, then we can begin to know them. And such persons can introduce us to Krishna. Such persons come to this world to introduce us to Krishna. It is impossible for us to understand Krishna by any other means except by the mercy of the great devotees. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was a ray of Vishnu, he came to this world to pick up devotees, to pick up conditioned souls and bring them back to Buddha. You can see he had a tremendous impact on the world. The disciples, I met many of his disciples who were still living at that time. And even though he had passed, even though Saraswati Thakur had passed away long before, it was obvious that he was still such a major influence in the world. I met several of his disciples. In the same manner, the Prabhupada Lamrita, one of the main methods of collecting information for that was interviewing Prabhupada's disciples and others who had had interaction with Prabhupada. So I got to use the same technique. I had to find out the few disciples that were still remaining, of which there are maybe only 4 or 5 in the world at the present time. Now, there are various difficulties in collecting this information. Apart from the difficulties of finding out who the disciples were and where they lived, and the various difficulties in tracking them down and going by train and bus and rickshaw and horseback and foot and so many ways to try to find them. But one of the main difficulties was that most of the disciples I met had had very little association with them. Because it's just like most of Prabhupada's disciples, they didn't actually have much personal association with them. You didn't see them very much. And many of them you can imagine that these were the last who were still present in this world. So many of them had joined when they were very young, and shortly after they'd been initiated, Saraswati Thakur passed away. So many didn't know much more than what was already written in various books. But of course, that was another of my sources of knowledge, was going to be... there's a lot of literature in Bengali either written by him or about him. So I consulted some of that, but there are still oceans more. Huge, huge volume of literature still untranslated. So anyway, I was conducting these interviews. But another problem is that several of the devotees I met, they didn't want to talk to me about this. Many of them, when they wanted to talk to me, they didn't want to talk to me at all. I wanted to talk about other things. I'd ask them about Saraswati Thakur, and they'd speak for 1 minute, and then they'd go on and talk about something else completely different, and I couldn't be on the subject. I actually found the household of devotees much more accommodating to me than the sannyasis. For some reason or other, it was never found it. So anyway, I was going here and there, and I was getting a few odd anecdotes here and there. Until one devotee in Mayapur, who's from Katak in Orissa, he asked me, well, have you seen Dr. Shekhar Prabhu? And so he told me, go and see him. So I went to visit him. He had joined the monk at a young age, when he was 16. And actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, as he did with many young boys who joined the monk, he took special care of them. He had been very affectionate to Jyoti Shekhar. There's been Jyoti, not Jyoti. Jyoti means life, and Jyoti is... The Oriya Kamalayi pronunciation, Yati. And it appeared that he'd been a very observant young boy, and he had kept his eyes open and ears open and seen so many things and heard so many things and remembered so many things. So he was living at home, and all his family. After leaving the monk, he'd become married, and all his family members were all devotees. Every evening his family members would join together and chant songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They all knew all the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur by heart, and that's quite good, because there are a lot of songs. So he was, at first, he was a little hesitant, but after some time he understood my purpose. When I explained to him what I wanted to do, and then he was very happy. I told him I want to collect anecdotes that people have personally seen, you've seen, you've heard, your own personal interactions with Saraswati Thakur. I said, I want to publish this for the benefit of the of the world in general and Vaishnavas in particular. They will be very valuable and instructive. So Dadi Shekharabhu told me, yes, I can tell you many such anecdotes. So I sat down with him under the thatched roof of his temple. His pulpit was small. And for about 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the evening, for 3 or 4 days, he told me so many things. And I would ask questions and prompt him. And he understood my purpose, and he didn't go off the point unless I asked him about some particular thing. But he would concentrate on just giving one story after another, after another, after another. So after 3 or 4 days, he said, okay, that's all for now. You'll come back again after some time. And what I went away, and after a few months I came back, and he'd written down a whole list of so many things. Yeah. He said, I can't remember them all at once, but whenever something comes in my mind, I make a note. So in this way, I visited him maybe 8 times, 10 times, 12 times, and for a few days at each time, and each time he told me so many things. And once he took me to a place in the middle of the Mahanadi River outside Katak, where there's an island, and on the island there's a big rock where you can see the imprint of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's foot. And we had many discussions also. He was a lifelong follower of Ananta Vasudeva.
Jaja Shaitan.
Yeah. Who's probably the most controversial figure in Gaudiya Math history. Anyway, there was much discussion on different points of philosophy based on that, on his following and on philosophy, and controversial, some controversies. So on certain points we had very severe differences of opinion, but nevertheless we were united in the purpose of wanting to broadcast the glories of Saraswati Thakur. Once he said to me that I'm like a merchant who has got the goods, and you are like a train who will bring them to the quiet place. Once I was discussing with him, and he happened to mention the name of, in the course of his speaking, he happened to mention the name of Bhaktivinoda Babaji. So I remember I'd seen the name of Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj in our calendar, Vaishnava calendar. I didn't know anything else more about him than that. And no one else that I'd spoken to also, they also didn't know anything. So when you mentioned the name of Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj, they said, do you know anything about Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj?
No.
So, yes, he said the name. So I said, well, could you tell me something about him?
And yes.
And the result is that book on Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj. He'd actually written a book himself in Oriya about Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj. And he personally translated that into Bengali in handwriting for me, because I don't know Oriya, but I know Bengali. And that and the extra anecdotes he told me formed the basis for the book, which I think many of you know, about Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj. So, of course, what he told about Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj is much less than that about Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj. And there are vast resources of information about Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj. But most of it is in old magazines and old means going back to the 1920s and 30s. The Gaudiya magazine especially, which was fortnightly magazine, published by the Gaudiya Math at that time. So this and other sources I've been researching over these years. It's been a long time since we've been able to see it. But at some point I thought I should publish the book instead of just going researching and researching. So hopefully when I get back to India in a few days I can work on actually getting it printed, as the final proofreading is supposed to be going on now. Now, one interesting thing about, I've said there are various biographies published, and there's one interesting point about them, is that most of these biographies were published by different sects or different what we might call splinter groups of the Gaudiya. So although the basic history is the same, it's presented somewhat differently in the various biographies. You'll find in one biography that such and such a devotee is the great hero who did everything for Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and others were simply rogues, or they're simply their names are not mentioned at all. Whereas in another group's biography, the ones who are represented as the rogues, they are the heroes, and the heroes of the other book are the rogues, or they're not mentioned at all. They simply don't exist. Because after Saraswati Thakur passed away, there was severe infighting within the Gaudiya Math. As Saraswati Thakur told his disciple, Abhay Charanaravinda Das, who we now know as Srila Prabhupada, he told him, Arunjalve, fire will burn. He was talking about the Gaudiya Math. He said, fire will burn, the fire of sectarian interests will blaze up and consume the mission. So practically that happened. And after Saraswati Thakur passed away, there were two major groups who fought with each other. And there was the court cases and physical fights and two murders also. So a very bitter feeling was generated. Therefore, the biographies that were written, they were very biased, actually. So it's very difficult for me to, you can imagine, it's very difficult for me to get actual subject or objective opinions or objective analyses of what actually happened during that period. Even if an incident happens, if you ask five different people, 5 minutes later, you'll get five at least slightly different versions. So you can imagine what it's like asking people more than 50 years after the event. Plus, people's memories tend to be influenced by what their opinions.
Настоящее.
So, it's a very sensitive subject, writing about Saraswati Thakur. Because whatever you write, various followers are going to be displeased. Unless you write a completely biased account, then everybody will be displeased. If you write a biased account, then one side will be pleased and the other side totally displeased. And if you write, if you try to write a balanced account, then both sides will say you're favoring the other side. So, notwithstanding that, I took up the difficult task of trying to write a biographical, biographical work on Saraswati Thakur. Now, before I start telling anecdotes, let's try and see the background in which Saraswati Thakur was present and preaching. We've all heard how Saraswati Thakur was uncompromising and strict and stern. He was a fighter for the truth. He didn't believe in compromise even slightly. He said, he who compromises is finished. Now, we very much admire his austerity and his strictness and his firm determination to only stick to the truth. But we may be surprised, why was he so strong? Was it really necessary? There seems to be a certain difference between Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. One of the differences being that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his writings, he pointed out the defects of wrong philosophies and misrepresentations of Vaishnavism. But in his personal dealings and his preaching, he was very polite with people. And even his writings, although he pointed out the defects, he was quite relatively polite about it. According to the well-known saying of Manu, Satyam Bhuryat Priyam Bhuryat Ma Bhuryat Apriyam Satyam. He said that Satyam Apriyam. He said that Manu writes that one should speak truthfully and pleasantly, and one should not speak a truth, even if unpleasant, one should not broadcast it. Satyam, even if it's unpleasant, one should not broadcast an unpleasant truth. Saraswati Thakur, he didn't adhere to that, not to not broadcast the unpleasant truth. And like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he didn't make friends with the people who were misrepresenting Krishna. He did not adopt any indirect means of presenting Gaudiya Vaishnavism. In English, there's a saying to call a spade a spade. Do you have a similar saying in Russian?
No.
And you could call a spade a manual earth-lifting instrument. If you call a spade, it's very clear what it is. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to openly say that people are rascals, fools, nonsense. Like father, like son, his spiritual son, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, had the same propensity. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he made many enemies. You can imagine if you call people rascals and cheaters, and even more so, if people are cheating others and making plenty of money out of it, and if you point that out and then their cheating stops, they'll be very upset to lose their money and their prestige. But let us try to visualize the situation in Bengal and India at that time. In many ways it was a very different world to the one we live in now. There was no intercontinental train travel, a plane travel. The railway network was a very modern introduction. Even the radio was very new. Jati Shekhar Prabhu, who lived in Qatar, told me that at that time when he was a boy, there was only one radio in the whole of Qatar, the radio receiver. That was the capital, well, the world was ruled by the British. I think they were dominant in the world in a way which is not comparable even to America at the present time. They were directly ruling most of the world. And India was considered the jewel in the British crown. India was very much more traditional then than nowadays. Although India in general and Bengal in particular was gone through many cultural changes due to the influence of the British, and then they put it in a slot within this class. It mentally put it in a slot. So among educated people or high class people in Bengal, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement was generally considered to be that something for very low class people. Nino Joto Chilo Hari Nami in Harilo, those who are very fallen, they were lifted up by. And one of the particular contributions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that he made Krishna consciousness available to everyone, regardless of caste. So many high caste people, they didn't like it, that we should, you know, we're from high caste, then why should we be considered on the same level as these low caste people? And many low caste people took to Krishna consciousness, being attracted by the chanting of Hare Krishna, and also being attracted by the social egalite that it offered. But in course of time, for various reasons, because the leaders of the Krishna conscious movement themselves became corrupt, therefore the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mostly became corrupted. Going against the whole teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, certain persons from the Brahmin caste claimed for themselves the hereditary right to be gurus. And because these so-called gurus were more interested in getting donations and respect from their disciples than giving them spiritual instruction, therefore everything deteriorated. So they didn't mind to tell people, yes, it's okay, you can eat flesh and you can do whatever you like, just keep on giving me money and I'll give you donations. And you'll all be happy. Yeah. So this was a major form of deviation within Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And there are also persons who misrepresented Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's exposition of the highest Bhava, Radha and Krishna, to fulfill their own carnal lusts. So there are many people claiming to be Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but who are actually simply lusty rascals. And they invented such things as, for instance, Kishori Bhajan. Kishori means a young girl, and Bhajan means a process of worship. Krishna is famous for consorting with the Vraja Kishoris, which means the younger of the Vrindavan. So certain vassals, they would also do their worship using some certain Kishoris. And in this way, introduced illicit sex into the Palpatis and Mahaprabhu. Because illicit sex in India at that time, and even at present, is socially reprehensible in India. But religion is, and even more at that time was, highly regarded. So the trick, their trick was to disguise illicit sex as a highly religious act. But naturally, more discerning people abhorred this. So Bhakti Santosa Thakur appeared as a ray of Vishnu. Bhakti Thakur, he was preaching Krishna consciousness. He was the first to turn the tide away from the disparagement of Krishna consciousness by educated and more cultured people.
Disparagement?
Disparagement means putting it down, speaking against it, speaking what? Against it.
No, the whole thing I didn't understand.
Bhakti Thakur was the first to turn the tide against the discouragement of Gaudiya Vaishnavism by the educated and cultured people of the time. But he prayed to Krishna that I can't do this work alone. You please send your representative. Of course, Bhakti Thakur himself is the representative of Krishna. But in his humility, he prayed for another representative to come. The acharyas, they're very kind, they don't do everything, they leave some work for us to do. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared in answer to the prayers of Bhaktinoda Thakur. And from the very beginning of his life, he demonstrated intense devotion to Krishna. At the age of 5 years, there's the well-known incident where Bhaktinoda Thakur brought some mangoes to his home, brought from the bazaar. And the young boy, Bimala, that was his name at home, Bimala Prasad, he took one of the mangoes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to worship Girihari Srila at home. And he chastised the young boy, that why are you taking food that's not offered to the deity? Don't you know that's an offense? So the boy vowed on the spot, I've made an offense, I don't know. At such a young age, he had such a sense of Krishna consciousness. He stuck to that vow throughout his life, because of that unknowing mistake as a young child. Naturally, people would bring gifts to sadhus, and fruit is the very common gift to bring to a sadhu. And mango is the king of fruit. So during the season, naturally people would bring mango. And they say, no, I am an offender. Even if there was an offense, just for the sake of argument, if there was an offense, that had been wiped out hundreds of millions and billions of times by his preaching and his firmness in devotional service, that he can say, no, I cannot do
that.
This is called nishtha, firm determination. Hmm. So this was the background in which Saraswati Thakur appeared. Probably most of you have read that book, Ray of Vishnu. Who has read that? Yeah, that's actually the main body, the biography in that book is, it's 95% from the taken from one of the biographies I was saying, which was published in Bengali and then translated very poorly into English. So that was re-edited and put in better English, and that is the basic substance of that book. So I won't tell much from that book, but having given some background, starting from tomorrow, I'll start to tell some various anecdotes. I'll tell one or two now, just to give some idea. That one headmaster of a school came and asked him for initiation. Of course, in those days, headmaster of a school was a very highly respected person, because a teacher means like a guru, and they weren't from the school, they were from the school. So this teacher happened to have a long beard. So Bhakti Santosa Thakur said, yes, you can take initiation, but you have to shave off your beard. So he said, well, you know, I've been growing my beard for a long time. He said, so Saraswati Thakur, you have to decide which is your priya. Priya means that which is very dear. So he chose his beard. It's a good test. Prabhupada also, he generally insisted that at least for initiation, male devotees shave their heads. It's a good test, because generally people are attached to their bodies and especially to the head, as it's mentioned in Bhagavatam. Lavanyakesha dharanam. In Kali Yoga, people will be very much attached to their beautiful husband. Another time, one person approached us with Thakur and said, why are you telling us so many difficult jokes? Because Sarasvati Thakur, he was preaching chant Hare Krishna and follow four regulated principles. Actually, he only told anything and follow the regulated principles. Which included no eating of meat, fish or eggs. Now, often when I was traveling in Bengal, people told me, in our home, we never eat meat or eggs. They considered that to be very good. But they didn't say we don't eat fish. They said meat or eggs. Because Bengali people are very attached to eating fish. There are many rivers and ponds in Bengal, and it's free food. Very nutritious and very tasty. And Bengalis like it very much. So it's, and when I said very tasty, I don't mean that you should eat it. Bengalis seem to like it. Personally, I think it stinks, but you know, wherever you go in Bengal, at midday you smell this fish smell. But you know, Bengalis like it very much. I don't. I don't mean when I said it tasty, I'm eating fish. I mean, I'm not saying I never ate fish. It's said that every saint has his past. I'm not saying I'm a saint. And every sinner has a future. So there's hope for me. So anyway, this man is saying, why are you telling us so many things, difficult things, no eating fish? Why don't you give us an easy process, such as chant Hare Krishna, eat fish and be happy. Well, he didn't say that, but that was implied. So Sarasvati Thakur said, you are fallen in the well. So I'm giving you a rope so to pull you out. And why do you want to try and pull me in? You can imagine if someone's falling in a well, someone tells a rope to try and pull him out, but instead he tries to pull the person down with him. So there are many such little anecdotes. And Krishna willing, I'll tell him on the morning. As I said, this is all going to be made into a book, Krishna willing. It should be published soon. In the meantime, I'd like to advertise two of my books, which I have here.
Prasadam.
Yes, Prasadam. Alright. Someone got the distribution?
Yeah.
Alright, well, we have some Prasadam for distribution here. So I guess I can do that now. If you don't like to come and put some Prasad, distribute Prasad. Somehow I can make the devotees happy, then I'll get their blessing. So please bless me and take some Prasad. And if you don't have any books,